What began over a year ago as a class project has developed into something way beyond what the students had originally envisioned. 18 verticals and 70 horizontals is the first outdoor sculpture of its kind on the University of Arkansas campus, and elsewhere as well. It started with a couple of sketches and is now an 8.5-foot-tall structure on the southeast lawn of the Fine Arts Building. Robert Lemming, a December 2011 graduate with a BA in sculpture, and Adam Crossan, a graduate of the Faye Jones School of Architecture and sculpture student, are the creators of this work. This collaboration may not have happened had it not been for the urging of their professor.
She's pretty instrumental just getting us started, making us collaborate in the first place, because it was if she hadn't probably forced me to get in a collaboration, which was interesting, but I wouldn't have probably made that initiative right away myself.
That's Robert, who had previously worked autonomously. He says he found this experience humbling.
To be, you know, at a certain age and just kind of relax your own ideas and your own priorities and figure out rather where we meet rather than, you know, my idea is the most important, and just being coming from a very kind of humble place where Adam and I really early on we realized we could come to each other like, hey, I had this great idea last night, and the other guy just shoot him down in flames, and nobody got upset. Nobody, you know, it was really allowed us to prioritize what was important.
Early on, the two knew they wanted a public spatial artwork that the viewer had to interact with and not just view from afar. Among many things they drew ideas from, Adam mentions an opening seed pod.
You know, it's holding something on the inside, but as it grows, it's going to open up and kind of leave that shell, that kind of fragmented piece, but then the housing on the, or what's on the inside is going to then grow from it. But we were kind of interested in that shell or that piece that was going to kind of get discarded as a formal opportunity. And then we kind of looked at developing a porosity from that.
And the work does resemble a shell. At first, using concept sketches and blackboard drawings, the idea went through many changes. The two eventually used a computer program called Rhino to develop a 3D model.
Instead of just doing like a 2D sketch and then showing it to Robert, and Robert showing me his and kind of going home and developing further sketches off of that, this allowed us to kind of create a real like visualization of it. So in real time, we could start to change what it looked like and tweak it to our liking.
The result is a model that, even on a computer screen, looks real, rotating around to be seen from all angles. But it isn't just an image. It provides the artist with measurements and information. It is their data bank. Typically, this information is given to a machine to make a piece, but Robert and Adam wanted to use their own two hands.
And I think Robert and I are both really intrigued in working manually, and we really saw it as an opportunity to kind of approach it from a really kind of a hybrid place that we don't see a lot of going on at this scale. You know, you see some of that in furniture design, but as far as public art in this scale and using wood, it's kind of what we wanted to do.
This manual process began with raw end cuts from poplar boards that were once piled up behind Flint & Sons hardwoods and would have otherwise been burned or left to rot. While well within budget, as in free, the boards also helped in determining the design.
We actually knew about these before we began the design process, and so we had considered using these from the get-go. So that sort of determined, along with a multitude of other things, the kind of trajectory in which we would go and sort of what it would look like. And they have a really nice amount of flexibility, which is conducive to the curve form that we developed.
650 of these poplar boards, after being milled down, table sawed, joined, and planed, make up the 70 horizontals, which curve around the 18 vertical structural members. These members are made through a different process called bent lamination.
And basically, we start off with a raw 2x6. We're using Western red cedar. And we join and plane that down and get it to the rough dimension that we want, and then take that and put it on the table saw, and we get these 1/4-inch by 2.5-inch strips that are, again, really flexible as well. And we can take those and put 8 to 10 of them together and layer them with glue, wrap them in plastic, and put them in these large forms that we've constructed.
The forms, also made of wood, look much like any other mold. The shape of the finished product is prominent, yet the supports can be seen. The cedar boards remain in the forms overnight. When they come out, there is still work to be done. They are somewhat beastly, with brown glue oozing out from the cracks, wax paper and plastic sticking out.
Let's try as hard as we might to keep everything within parameters. It's going to, when you force these things together, you can't see it all and you can't control it all. So when you pull it out, you'll realize parts of the surface are slightly taller than others, and it has to be. It's just part of the cleanup process.
The pieces must be sanded, three times actually, with three different grits of sandpaper. Once smooth, Robert says the treatment process begins.
You can see, like this side, we went ahead and put some treatment on, but this is how pale they look before anything happens. So you get an idea for what the colors of the cedars were, but by putting a clear penetrating epoxy system on there, we not only prevent further mold and damage for these, make them weatherproof and insect-proof, but it also re-enlivens those colors that have kind of faded out. And by the time we put a couple layers of like marine varnish on it to protect it from the elements even further, those colors just really pop.
And they do. These curved beams are each their own little work of art. The various shades of red, orange, and brown, arranged in certain ways, contrasting with one another. While assembly began 3 weeks ago, to get to that point, the artists had other steps to go through, such as funding and campus regulations. They revitalized the Contemporary Sculpture Society and brought their idea to the Associated Student Government.
They really liked it. We were kind of playing off of the energy of Crystal Bridges and the fact that there's not hardly any, if any, student art on campus. And so we pitched it to them, and they were very receptive and awarded us the funding for it. And we were actually the third highest funded student organization on campus, which was really amazing, you know, to see them support the arts in that way.
This led to a campus-wide collaboration, with everyone from campus planning to facilities management playing a role in this final display. And as for the location,
proximity to the wood shop was great. but it is one of the busier kind of thoroughfares on campus.
People walking from the south side of campus, say by the Greek Theater to the library, the Union, or to the law school, will walk right by it.
And one of the ideas behind the piece was you kind of to take you through this sort of extended threshold from the beginning to the kind of middle, or the kind of place where it terminates. So there's this kind of compression that occurs when you walk through it, and then there's kind of this release when you get into the inside. So kind of pairing that up with this such a chaotic and busy thoroughfare on campus, I think heightened the experience of that, or potentially could. So that, and plus it could also be sort of a moniker for the School of Fine Art as well, I think. And
passersby are welcome and invited to not just look, but to walk through the spiraling interior. That's actually part of the art, the people being seen through the wood by others, adding another layer of engagement. When asked what the meaning behind the piece is, Robert and Adam had trouble picking out just one thing, but did mention
sort of being that mediator between the imagination and the kind of physical world. Like, can we take something that's not seen necessarily on an everyday basis and kind of put it into fruition and kind of pique people's interests and imagination, and especially children. And it's really exciting to kind of interact with them and kind of see them and their interest in it. It's just something that's kind of, it's this different form.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.